Welcome to another message from LifePoint Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center, Kansas. For more information on LifePoint Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. It is our prayer that this message will help you live in focus every day. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Steve Raines.
Can you think of a time where a confrontation, an argument, an interaction you had with someone went south really, really quick? Have you ever had those moments, you know, and you're just like, wow, how did that happen? You know, maybe it was they followed you too close, or the green light had been green for a half a second too long. The task that was at hand didn't go exactly the way that you would have done it or how they would have done it. Maybe the coach called the wrong play and you would have never called that play. Or, you know, they put the toilet paper so it comes out the bottom instead of over the top. You know, let's just be honest this morning. Don't people just drive you crazy sometimes? Don't you wish that they could be like us? Right? And, I mean, we've all had those feelings, those frustrations, maybe anger towards people, whether justified or because we woke up a little bit moody. Even as we talk about this, who comes to your mind? Maybe you're holding a grudge against somebody, perhaps. Maybe you find yourself avoiding somebody or talking about them, but not to them. We've all been there, haven't we? Doesn't matter if you've served Jesus for years. Doesn't matter if you are just trying to, you know, sort this spiritual journey out, or maybe you're far from God. We all identify with those scenarios. And as I prepared this week and I began to think about times and people in my life that rubbed me the wrong way, that I had confrontation with, perhaps, you know what I learned? Their name all started with the same letter. I'm not going to tell you what that letter was, just in case your name starts with the same letter. I don't want you to think, oh, that's why he looks at me that way. But this morning, as we come to the last chapter of the book of Philippians, this letter written by the Apostle Paul to the church at Philippi, a church that we've learned we would do well to emulate, a church that is healthy, a church that serves as a blueprint, really, for us of what we should want to be, what we would want to be like as followers of Jesus. Paul doesn't have to correct much as he's writing this short four, what we have placed the four chapters to make up this letter. It's not dealing with big issues. There's a couple things that he talks about that he addresses, but by and large, I mean, this is like a great, encouraging, exhorting book. It's a stable church. All of us would agree how important stability is. No matter where you are spiritually, all of us prefer stability over chaos, right? I mean, we long for that. We enjoy stability. As long, you know, how important is stability to the Apostle Paul? Well, the Spirit inspired him to write several things revolving around standing, and standing obviously involves stability. You can't, if you don't have stability, you're not going to be standing. And so in Ephesians chapter 6, Paul writes this in verse 10, finally, be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Put on the full armor of God so that, why? That you can take your stand against the evil one, or against the devil's schemes. Two verses later, he writes, therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything to stand, what's he say? Stand firm. Peter, in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 9, writes this, resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that your brothers throughout the world are undergoing the same kinds of suffering. So resist, stand firm, stability, it all fits together. God's desire for you, God's desire for us, God's desire for me is that there would be this stability in your life. There would be this stability in the church. There would be this stability in your relationships, in your home, in the people that you interact with. In fact, Paul writes this in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58. He says, therefore, my dear brothers, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. So then, how do we do it? I mean, you read those verses, those four passages of scriptures that we've looked at, and you say, well, then how do we do it? How do we stand firm? In the midst of relationships that can frustrate us, in the midst of times that are changing incredibly fast around us, how are we to walk in stability? I think Paul gives us three anchor points in our verses today that we're going to look at. The first one is simply to cultivate unity. The pursuit of stability is somewhat dependent on the relationships that you and I have with individuals, individuals within the church, individuals within our family, within the community. And so Paul addresses this because being in right relationship with people is critical to having stability in your life. Have you found that to be true? He said, well, Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17, very well-known passage of scripture, it says this, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. The church is designed where people can develop each other. But what happens when the church folk get mad at the church folk? There's not sharpening usually that's going on. There may be stabbing, right? Philippians chapter 4, verse 1 says this, therefore, my brothers, you whom I love and long for, my joy and the crown. I mean, think of those words that he's laying out to the church at Philippi. That is how you should stand firm in the Lord, dear friends. How do you stand firm? Everything that he's said up to this point in the book of Philippians, that's how you stand firm. He says, I plead with you, Yodiah, and I plead with Syntyche to agree with each other in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, loyal yoke fellow, to help these women who have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers, whose names are in the book of life. We need to learn an important spiritual lesson just from these few verses. When there is conflict in the church, at a high level corporately, it will generate instability in the lives of people personally. If there is conflict on a corporate level, then that risks destabilizing people personally. Now let me ask you a question. How many have ever seen that occur in the lives of people? There's conflict, you know, maybe the pastoral staff's not getting along with each other, or the board's not getting along with each other, or just people in leadership within a church are like not, you know, serving each other and loving each other that as Christ loves the church, and there's this stuff going on. How many of you have seen how that destabilizes on lower levels? Let me remind you, as some of you are like looking at me like, uh-oh. I believe in preventative preaching. All right? We aren't looking at this morning because we had an elders meeting Thursday night that went really, really long. It did go long. Really long. I didn't let them leave. I was having fun with them. I'm not sure if they were having fun, but I was having fun. And we were talking about the vision and direction and values and just who we are and who we want to be and looking out in the next year and 5 years and 10 years and just dreaming. And it was, and eating M&Ms. It was a great meeting. Let me just say this, man, I am so grateful for LifePoint's elders and their commitment and their love for this church. They don't serve because of the wages. Let me just, as we're talking about, let me just say this, man, because, this is like the week after Easter, and I am just still excited about what occurred in last week. And as I think about the Seder meal that occurred Friday night, and you know, there was over 180 some odd people here from not just LifePoint, but across the community that took in the Seder meal and had that experience. And I'm not just excited because there's that many people there. What excites me was the spirit by which you all served and made it happen. From those that organized, you know, from the very get-go, to those that showed up Friday and helped serve, to those that were a part of tearing down. Man, you guys rocked. It was fun. You know, sometimes people serve and they're like, they'd rather be washing their car because that's so much funner, right? But man, everything that was done was just done with this attitude that was just awesome. And then I think about the breakfast that we had last Sunday morning, and by the spirit by which it was served in. And I felt like I walked into the Hyatt and the spread that was on the table. I was like, man, I hope no one shows up because this looks really good. And I want it all to myself. It looked awesome. And the spirit by which it was served, and then the sanctuary was flipped, and then everyone showed up, and it was awesome. And there was like over 90 plus people that were served at the breakfast. And then our attendance last Sunday was like 253, which was awesome. And there was people that, you know, we went out and visited on Monday. And I mean, I was just stoked about it. Because it's exciting to see God working and God moving and God just using our gifts and our talents and that person next to you. It's fun. Back to Philippians. What is the result of seeing people become unstable because of conflict or disunity? You know what happens? People begin to gossip, right? People begin to talk about individuals or talk about situations. They take up another person's hurt, or they take up another person's offense. People begin to read all kinds of things into situations. They begin to project, and things were supposedly said that were never said. And often the result is this, that they quit coming to church. They pull back. They quit being involved. Why? Because of disunity, right? On the other hand, when everyone is operating in harmony, there's going to be peace. There's going to be the strengthening of lives, and God's kingdom can go forward. What happens is the strength of the church becomes the strength of the people. And that is so true. And Paul understood that. And he writes in verse 2, I plead with you, Diet, I plead with Syntek to agree with each other in the Lord. From verse 3, it seems that they are influential leaders in the church, influential individuals in the church, but now they're at odds with one another. Understand, this doesn't appear to be a doctrinal issue that is causing this disagreement between these two individuals, this controversy, or Paul would have taken a side. Paul would have addressed it. But there's this division, and it's stopping the spread of the gospel. It's hindering. It's being causing distraction. It's causing attention. And when that happens, the church starts focusing inward, doesn't it? Not contending for the faith, but more often contending for a position, contending for whatever, a conviction, or contending for wallpaper. Whatever the scenario may be. And they're not loving each other. And what was the problem? We don't know. I wish we knew, but we don't know. Perhaps it was the carpet or the color of the paint, and they both had their preferences because that's of eternal value. Maybe it was both of them were single, and this like, you know, hot new guy just got saved, and he started coming to their church, and they were both interested in him. And so they were fighting for him. We don't know. Perhaps it was, one of them took the other one's seat because that's where she had sat since the church was birthed, and that's her seat. But the Bible is kind of humorous if you think about it. All right? Imagine when this letter came, it was read to the church. That was the custom of the day, that when the church would receive a letter from one of the apostles, that letter would be read. So the pastor got up one Sunday morning, or when they gathered together, and said, "Hey, listen, we received first class airmail this week, a letter from the Apostle Paul. He's in prison in Philippi. I'm not going to preach to you. Man, I got a barn burner, but I'm saving it for next week. This week, we're going to read this letter from the Apostle Paul." Everyone's, "Oh yeah, man, and we want to hear Apostle Paul." And he opens up, the pastor opens up the letter, and the congregation has just finished the song service or whatever the order of service was. And he opens up and he begins to read the letter, and it goes something to the effect of, "I thank God every time I remember you. I'm praying for you. God is working in you. It's right for me to feel this way about you." And the Philippians' response would be what? Really? If you were the church of Philippi and the Apostle Paul just said this about you, how would you respond? All right, I hope you'd be like, "Oh yeah." Right? So come on now, you got to work with me here from here on out when we're talking about this, all right? Whatever happens, conduct yourself in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. And the church at Philippi would probably respond, how? Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, okay, you're doing good. "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself." And what happens? I can just see it in my mind's eye. Udiah looks over at Syntek. He's talking about you. Have you ever done that in a message? Listen. That's for you. Paul knows about you. And then they get to the point of the letter. "I plead with Udiah and I plead with Syntek to agree with each other in the Lord." Direct hit. I would be like, you know, me coming up this morning and say, "Hey, let me just talk about Roger a little bit this morning. Roger's having some issues, and you know, we really need to pray for Roger." And how many of you would be a little put out by that and probably would leave? You know, Roger's fine. He's not dealing with any issues, all right? Paul knew the conflict between these two could bring conflict to the church as a whole. And so he says this, "I plead with you to agree with each other." Literally, Paul is saying, be of the same mind. The same mind is one of reconciliation, the same mind that brings mutual love. It puts the good of the church above personal interests. Paul compares the mind of the carnal versus that of someone who has their citizenship in heaven in chapter 3, verses 19 and 20. But in verse 3 of Philippians 4, he says, "Yes, and I ask you, loyal yoke fellow, help these women who have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life." He says, help these women. They're not bad people. They're not labeled as troublemakers. How many know people aren't your enemy? Right? You should have no enemies in this room ever, because people aren't your enemy. They have come alongside Paul. Paul writes about in the work of the gospel. Their names are in the book of life. How many know even the best people can have conflicts? Right? We must cultivate unity and work at keeping our hearts right. And we have to learn to manage conflict, because whenever there's two people, there is potential for conflict, right? Instead of conflict managing you, we have to learn to manage that conflict. We have to give it to Christ. Often, we're afraid of conflict. But listen, conflict and friction can be a good thing. Steve, what are you talking about? That's crazy. You know how it can be a good thing? This is glass half full type of preaching right here. It can be a good thing because it can refine and it can strengthen our love and commitment. Because you know what it does? It exposes our heart, doesn't it? All of a sudden, you see that person across the, the dollar store or Family Dollar, whatever this one is. General Dollar. General Store. Whatever it is. All right. Sorry. I just go there. And you see so-and-so there when you walk in. And you're like, so you're like, dun, 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 dun. You know, and you're avoiding. And all of a sudden, it should be like, oh, wow. Something's wrong here if I'm doing that. If that's how I'm responding to someone who's created in the image of God, what's that say? Something's wrong here with me. The early church had some conflict, but they never attacked the character of those that were holding to a various position or a specific position. Acts 15 talks about it. It writes about an early conflict in the church. They had the best interest of the church in mind, not personal agendas. They walked in this mutual submission, not personal rights. We as a church have to continue to cultivate unity. The minute a person stakes territory or claims a right, you know what happens? Cultivation is hindered. These two ladies, it's interesting, Udaya, her name literally means prosperous journey or success. Syntek, her name means pleasant acquaintance or good luck. They weren't matching up with their name. Paul's exhortation, and it's an exhortation seen in other places within Scripture, is this, man, agree together in the Lord. Work towards resolving. Extend mercy. Extend forgiveness. Extend grace. The body of believers is encouraged not to take sides, but to help them resolve the issue. Let me ask you this morning, is stability important to you? Cultivate unity, but also we learn this, continue in joy. Look at it there in verse 4. Too often people allow themselves to be victimized by circumstances, right? We tie our joy to circumstances. If I could have that job, if I could get that raise, if I could have that car, if I could be friends with that person, then I would be happy. If every Sunday was Easter Sunday and the throngs of people would come to church, then I would be a happy pastor. If we could get our way, and if it works out like we want it, then we're happy. But inner problems, inner difficulties, inner storms of life, and what happens? We lose our joy. So we're riding this roller coaster because our joy has become tied to circumstances and what is happening to us and what's happening around us. And Paul says, man, don't do that. What's he say in verse 4? Rejoice in the Lord always. And I will say it again. Rejoice. How many say that's hard? Right? Rejoice in what? Circumstances? Rejoice in your situations? Nope. In the Lord. He doesn't say rejoice in circumstances because why? Circumstances change. He doesn't say rejoice in people. Why? Because people change. People can let you down, but rejoice in the Lord. Why? Because the Lord changes not. I love it when very rarely do I ask Robin or the worship team to do a song. And I didn't do that this week. And I sat there during worship and I was like, man, this is pretty cool. When every song you sing ties right into the message. This morning we sang The Great I Am. How many know God is always present tense? He's I am. He's not I was. He's not I will be. He is I am. And friends, that offers and that should offer incredible stability to you and I. Paul doesn't say, just say rejoice in the Lord always once, but what's he say? I say it again, rejoice, just in case you forgot, right? Did you catch the timing of our rejoicing? What's the timing of it? Always. Even when you're woken up in the middle of the night because the dog has to go outside? Always. And you have to go to the grocery store to get so you can have cereal? Always. Even when you have more month than you have money? Always. Even when your kids aren't behaving and they're stressing you out and you're wondering why you had them? Always. Even when you're afraid of the future because you just got a report from the doctor? Always. Like when this is going on? Yes, always. But what about then too? But surely not, no, even then. Wait, I got one. Paul would say always. See, Monday morning, I drove out to Oakley. It was kind of a spontaneous trip in that I wasn't sure I was going to go. And I told the Lord, okay, if I wake up before my alarm goes off at 5:30, then I'll take it that I need to go. And so I woke up at 5:15. Ding. So, okay, Robin, I'm going. Drove out to Oakley, Kansas. Oakley is where I cut my teeth in ministry. Pastor Jamie Bloom had enough guts to give a 20-year-old what I would call a punk chance in ministry. If you're not sure where Oakley, Kansas is, Oakley is the home of the world's largest prairie dog, a two-headed rattlesnake, and a five-legged cow. You see the signs on I-70 as you're heading west. But I went there Monday because we were celebrating Jamie's life Monday morning. You see, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, took him. He was 61 years old. Took him from his family, took him from his church. But as I sat there, I learned that ALS couldn't take the song from his lips. It couldn't take an attitude from him that said, in Christ. Jamie would, if you knew him, he's the one that married Robin and I. He would always play with the change in his pocket and he would pull it out as he was talking to you and jingle his change and he'd walk through our facility. He'd always be whistling, you know. You know, like, where's Andy? Right? Incredible guy. Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. Finally, what else must we do to maintain stability? We must do this, concentrate on the Lord. Look at it, verse 5. Let your gentleness be evident to who? All. The Lord is near. We live in a society that says you need to stand for yourself. You need to look out for number one. You need to fight for yourself because no one else will. If you don't do it yourself, no one will get it done. And Paul says this in verse 5, let your gentleness be evident to all. Gentleness, it's this word that comes from the root generosity and gentleness and patience with others. The idea then is don't be a person who retaliates. The kind of person who is hard on others if they make a mistake. Don't be condemning. But be generous. Don't try to get even. Speak life. Let your words be life-giving. I mean, you read through the book of Proverbs and almost every chapter in the book of Proverbs, you see the author of Proverbs writing about the words that you speak, the words that you say. Let them be life-giving. Let them be as apples of gold and settings of silver. Speak over your kids. You're highly favored. The Lord goes before you. One of Jamie's boys, he's the pastor there at the church now, wrote about Jamie. Every morning he would circle their boys, their kids up. They have five kids. And he would speak over them. You are the head, not the tail. You can do all things through Christ. The Lord goes before you. See, You and I have to be kind, and we need to pray, and we need to develop this thing that we are kind and gentle, even if the other person isn't being that way. That's hard. Be a person who is calm. Be a person who is stable, not one that's just like ready to fly off, you know. You say, that sounds great, but how am I going to do that? Because that's bottom line. How am I going to be that way, right? I mean, because I know, you say, I know me, and I'm not one to just like be like passive aggressive. I'm like bulldog aggressive. How do I do that? Look at it, verse 5. How do you do it? The Lord is near. The presence of the Lord, his very presence is near you. Did you sense him this morning in this place? His presence is near you. His presence is near you always, not just when you come to church on Sunday. He knows what's going on in your life. You're not alone. God knows what's happening in a particular situation. He knows who is right. He knows who is wrong. God saw the whole situation, and he will take care of you. Psalms 37:25, the psalmist writes this, I have never seen the righteous forsaken. That's his promise to you. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and everything else will be added unto you. Make sure you keep giving him your focus. Make sure you keep giving him your attention. And what happens if you do that? It will keep you from seeking revenge. It will keep you from getting all worked up about a situation. Draw near to the Lord, and he will draw near to you, Scripture teaches us. And you know what happens when we draw near to the Lord? We keep our heart right. God is going to work on your behalf. Life verse, Matthew 5:8, say it all the time. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. What causes instability in our lives more than anything else? You know, one of the greatest causes of instability in our life is when we forget God in the equation. When we forget that God is near. If that happens, it's trouble. Think about it. Think about all the times in your life where just even if it was for a moment of time and you forgot where your mind went, where your emotions went, where your feelings went. They can go south in a hurry, can't they? Fear shows up and we start living on all those bad thoughts, and all of a sudden we find ourselves not trusting people. You can see a great example in 1 Samuel chapter 21. It's a classic example of someone who forgets that God is near, and the result is that they lose their stability. The person is David. He's fleeing from King Saul. God has promised him the kingdom, and Saul is out to kill him. And David has forgotten that the Lord is near. And what's he do? He takes matters into his own hands. And when that happens, instability sets in his life. And you pick it up in 1 Samuel chapter 21, verse 10. And it says, that day David fled from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. David, unstable, he goes to the Philistines, who he had been killing, right? They said songs about, hey, this is a guy who has killed 10,000 of us, and he's here. That's who David runs to. Good company, right? That's a way to bring security to your life. Hang out with your enemies. Verse 11, but the servant of Achish said to him, isn't this David, the king of the land, isn't he the one they sing about in their dances? Saul has slain his thousands and David has his tens of thousands. David took these words to heart and was very much afraid. When you forget God is near, you're setting yourself up for humiliation. You're setting yourself up for fear. You're setting yourself up for a mind that just goes all over the place. And what does David do? Look at it, verse 13. So he pretended to be insane in their presence. And while he was in their hands, he acted like a madman, making marks on the doors of the gate, letting saliva run down his beard. Achish said to his servant, look at the man, he is insane. Why bring him to me? Am I so short of madman that you have to bring this fellow here to carry on like this in front of me? Must this man come into my house Chapter 22, verse 1 says, David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. See, he became unstable and he makes these stupid mistakes and he places himself in the wrong place. What happened to David? Psalms 34 tells us what happens to David. He begins to put his eyes back on God. In verse 1, it's a psalm of David when he pretended to be insane before Abimelech, who drove him away and he left. And he says this in verse 1, I extol the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips. My soul will boast in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord and he answered me. He delivered me from all of my fears. Verse 5, those who look to him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. This poor man called and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and he delivers them. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Fear the Lord, you his saints. For those who fear him lack nothing. The lions may grow weak and hungry, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. He begins to place his eyes back on God. In verse 15, the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. His ears are attentive to their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. The righteous cry out, and what happens? And the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their trouble. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. He goes from instability to stability almost instantly, it appears. How? How does that happen? He focuses on the Lord. I mean, it sounds so simple, but yet I stand before you this morning and I think of times in my life, and if the worship team would come, I think of times in my life where things were transpiring. There was conflict of some measure. There was physical needs going on. And I thought, and I recount those times, and there's been times where I went running into the presence of the Lord. And there was other times where I just stood there and I camped out and I let those thoughts and those situations just fester and build and become overwhelming. And you know what? And eventually you do the wise thing and you go to that sacred place. And all of a sudden, those big things become really, really, really small because they're put in their proper perspective against the great I am. And all of a sudden, you're like, wait a minute. Maybe the report's still bad. Doesn't change the report. Doesn't necessarily change the situation. But all of a sudden, you're like, you know what? God is near me. God is with me. I sense him now. I sense his presence. And all of a sudden, that thing that felt so, so, so big begins to fade away because the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ear is attentive to their cry. The righteous cry out and the Lord hears them and he delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit.
This concludes today's message. We hope you can join us next Sunday for services beginning at 10:30 at Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center. To get more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. And we hope you can join us next Sunday with Pastor Steve Raines.